morning, Your Honor. Kate Benward on behalf of Mr. Larson. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. The court committed reversible error when it, in its wholesale admission of 5 separate acts that spanned over 20 years alleged by 3 different witnesses under 404B in Mr. Larson's case. The errors are threefold. First, the court failed to identify a non-propensity purpose for admission of the act when it instructed the jury that it could consider whether or not the touching occurred, whether it was done for the purpose of sexual gratification. There was not an issue of motive. There was not intention of accident or mistake. And so without naming a non-propensity purpose, the error under 404B requires reversal because it simply doesn't meet the stringent standards that 404B requires. Second, the court erroneously allowed the evidence to be considered as part of a common scheme or plan, distilling similarity of results and mistaking that for a plan that was devised by Mr. Larson, when the facts of his case were that, in so many instances, there were as many differences as there were similarities. For instance, there was a public pool, one instance of abuse that came in as separate evidence. Others were in a home. Others were with other people in the room. Others were when he was alone with the child. So as many differences as there were, the court found similarities that certainly are true of any, perhaps, case in which a child alleges that they are molested. But here there was no significant similarity for the court to derive this common scheme or plan. That error in itself violated ER 404B and requires reversal. Third, the court failed to consider and properly weigh the prejudice versus probative value of each of the separate acts. Now, there's no question that evidence of sexual propensity is highly prejudicial. And here, 5 separate acts that spanned 20 years certainly carried a special prejudicial weight and required weighing, significant weighing by the court, rather than the wholesale finding that, sure, it's a danger that it could be prejudicial. It is propensity evidence. But without separately considering the probative value of the vastly divergent acts in relation to the prejudice that it would carry in this specific case. Now, reversal is required on those 3 separate grounds, any of which the court can find. The errors are not harmless. We see that there's been a series of trials discussed in this case. One of the prior allegations, or I'm sorry, it was actually after involving CS, the incident at the pool. He was tried and acquitted of that case. At trial, they talked about that case, and he was asked, well, were these other incidents brought in? Did the jury hear these other allegations? They did not. And in fact, he was acquitted. And so the strength of that evidence, the relevance of that to this case, is highly questionable. And certainly, we don't know if the court would have properly weighed the evidence under the prejudice prong, whether the outcome would have been different. The first trial when Mr. Larson was first tried for these, for the one charge of molestation, there was a hung jury. And the presentation of these 5 separate acts was different in the 2 trials. In the first trial, the state opened with the actual allegation, the one alleged touching of 3-year-old EB. In the second trial, and then discussed the limiting purpose of these other acts. In the second trial, the state took a different tack. The state presented a chronological order of events in which EV was simply put in the middle, or that's the last of the chronology. And so the importance of these other events is unquestionable in this case, and reversal is required for that on those grounds alone. Does the court have any questions?
Are you alleging it's misconduct for the prosecutor to create that history in light of the response on the motion in limine to allow the 404B evidence?
It's not misconduct, Your Honor. It just shows the effect. The fact that these other acts, these 5 other acts, certainly the role they played in that trial was crucial. Even the way you present them, even the way you merge this within them, made a difference, apparently, to a jury. And so it's just that the importance of these acts, the real need to weigh the prejudice of these acts in light of their probative value is indisputable, and that simply shows that.
Well, the rule presumes it's indisputable in every case.
And it is here, Your Honor. And where there was a violation, where they were erroneously admitted under 404B, there's no question that it would have affected, it had a bearing on the outcome of the case.
The evidence would seem to establish clearly by a preponderance that each of the acts occurred. His identity is not questioned.
Correct.
So you're just saying that the court didn't put enough weight on the prejudice?
That's one of the errors, Your Honor. That is absolutely, did not properly weigh the prejudice of each separate act. That is an error that requires reversal in itself. Courts are clear that there must be an individual weighing of each act, the probative value versus the prejudice, especially important in sex cases such as these. The separate error, Your Honor, that I began with was the error of not finding a non-propensity purpose in admitting under the first prong in which it instructed the jury, in which it could consider whether any touching occurred, whether it was done for the purpose of sexual gratification. That was not a non-propensity purpose. The court didn't find that that came in under motive, because motive wouldn't apply. The court wrapped up motive, accident, intent, wrapped those up and gave this instruction.
Common scheme or plan wasn't presented?
It was, Your Honor. That was a separate. So there was, the jury was allowed to consider the evidence for two separate purposes, common scheme or plan, or this for the purpose of sexual gratification. The problem with that is there's no non-propensity purpose there. The court wasn't able to name that. It just kind of mixed together three different theories that didn't apply in Mr. Larson's case.
Mr. Larson's defense here was one of general denial.
Denial, correct. And that is why these accident motive were not at issue. And so the court couldn't justify under that. And it's particularly
if you have a series of sex acts and they're properly admitted as to prove a common scheme or plan, or because the jury could find that, it's the aggregation of those that is highly probative, whether you're looking at whether the act occurred or whether it proves sexual motivation.
I can answer that on rebuttal, Your Honor. I can answer that here. On rebuttal. Thank you.
Answer, please.
Oh, sure. Your Honor, separate acts come in. They need to each be individually considered, the probative versus prejudicial value. Here, the acts were diverse. They were spanned 20 years.
Well, so what you're saying is that they weren't substantially similar.
That's right, Your Honor. And so
you're saying that the common scheme or plan exception shouldn't have been.
I am arguing that, Your Honor. And I'm also arguing that the court erroneously allowed the jury to consider a separate grounds in an and/or instruction in which they could consider either common scheme or plan. So even if you found common scheme or plan, they were allowed to consider it for an improper, propensity purpose, because the court in its first instruction to the jury that it could consider it for the purpose of sexual gratification, that is the court didn't identify a non-propensity purpose. So the error is there and the harm is there, even if you did find common scheme or plan did apply, which in these circumstances I don't think that it did. But either way, the jury was allowed to consider it as propensity evidence because of that first error.
But why does the jury have to be told more than it's maybe admitted for finding common scheme or plan or sexual gratification?
Well, the jury was allowed. Otherwise, the jury wouldn't be allowed to consider these other acts. They were explicitly limited in their consideration of it through the limiting instruction that was given to them. To those two things. The first being clearly an error because it was basically instructing them to use it as propensity evidence and or for common scheme or plan. And so they were allowed to consider it for a purpose that's simply not allowed under 404E or 404B. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, I'm Kathleen Weber, and I represent the State of Washington. In this child molestation case, the Court considered evidence of five prior acts against three other witnesses to determine whether or not it was admissible under ER 404B. The question before the Court is twofold. First, what standard of review should the Court apply? If the Court correctly applied the law, then the standard of review is abuse of discretion. If there's a question about what the law is, then the review is de novo. Primarily, in this case, the standard of review the court should be using is the abuse of discretion standard, because the court has set out a four-factor test that the court is to consider. This particular trial judge meticulously, on the record, went through the four-factor test. It's very clear from her decision which factor she was addressing and what factor she was considering within each factor to come to her conclusions. So primarily, the court should be applying the abuse of discretion standard. There is one issue that has been raised by the defense that would merit de novo review if this court chose to accept review of that issue. And the reason why I say that is because it was not an issue that was raised at the trial court level. This being a question of a violation of a court rule rather than a constitutional question under RAP 2.5, there's no basis for the court to...
What is the issue?
The issue is whether or not the court properly weighed the probative value versus the prejudice. That's the fourth prong. And the question more in a more refined way is, does the trial court have discretion to assess that evidence any way it thinks is appropriate and relevant under the facts of a specific case? Now, the defendant has argued when you've got five separate acts, you have to look at each one individually and take Act A and weigh it against the prejudice value, Act B, weigh it against the prejudice, et cetera, et cetera. What the trial court did here initially, at least, and I dispute that the court didn't do this in the motion for reconsideration, but what the trial court did here initially is said, look, all of these acts are prejudicial to the defendant because there's always the possibility that a jury is going to find that he's just a sexual deviant. But I find that it's more, the probative value of all of these acts together demonstrates a clear plan, and also...
So that seems really clear with respect to common scheme or plan. As far as I can tell, this is a standard application of the common scheme or plan exception and how to do it, and you get the aggregation of all of the cases, usually to prove that the act happened where the defendant is denying it and the testimony of the witnesses is vulnerable to attack. Mm-hmm. So, but the argument I just heard, I think, was slightly more nuanced, which is that somehow, even if it was okay to come in aggregate without prior act by prior act weighing, that was somehow wrong to let that come in to evaluate the question of sexual motivation. Now,
well,
I don't believe I've heard that issue before, but it seems to me, and, you know, this is kind of a softball question, I guess, but if you get the benefit of the aggregate acts with respect to whether the act itself occurred, why wouldn't you also get the benefit of the aggregate act, prior acts, to prove sexual motivation if there's any question about whether the person acted with sexual motivation? And I take it that in this case there was, because the defendant tried to make everything look, at least arguably, tried to make everything look inadvertent.
Right, and that's what the court ultimately found, is that part of his plan was to make a plausible explanation for saying, oh, it was an accident, or you must misunderstand, or whatever. And, in fact, that's how he chose his victims, is ones who might not understand what's really going on here. As the trial court reasoned, you know, the jury could still believe E.V. that he touched her, but then there's still a question, and disbelieve his story that, hey, I was picking her up by her midsection to take a toy away from her, and still have that question of, well, you know, was he just picking her up and inadvertently touched her on her crotch for non-sexual purposes, or was this for the purpose of sexual motivation? And so it was relevant and very probative on that particular question.
Well, sexual motivation is an element of the crime, right? In this case, it's not an aggravating factor.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. So it was relevant to prove an issue in the case. You know, this trial court very carefully went through that. The defense has also argued that the court erred in finding that it was and allowing it for propensity purposes. And the court before oral argument, or before the evidence was introduced, gave a limiting instruction, and again at the end of the case gave a limiting instruction, and it specifically said, you can't use this for propensity purposes. So I don't think that argument should be accepted by the court, because the trial court specifically said you can't do it, and jurors are presumed to follow the court's instructions. The court specifically said...
Well, I'm not sure that argument would work in a case where it really was a blatant disregard for the general, for the purpose of 404B. I mean, no, to put in something that was propensity and then say, but don't take it for propensity, and since the jurors always follow the court's instructions, we would just swallow that. I don't think so.
Yeah, but I also think that under the facts of this case, the court had a tenable basis for determining that there was specific... I guess the language is markedly similar features between the five prior instances and the charged instance when it identified a similar kind of victim, somebody who would be vulnerable and who would not necessarily understand or would be likely to not report or would be easily debunked if they did report as saying, well, you just dreamed it or you mistook me, whatever you... Similar circumstances, have a legitimate reason to be around the child. There are others nearby, but not necessarily watching what's going on. And committing the act in geographically distinct areas. So there's the opportunity, not the opportunity, for people to get together and say, hey, you know what happened to me? Oh, no, that happened to me too. So it's far less likely that he's going to get detected in that reason. And similar kind of conduct. This is a guy who is, rather than grooming his victims, he is calculatedly doing the most amount of sexual touching he can while still getting away with it. And part of that plan is touch in a manner that I'm not going to leave a mark, I'm not going to injure the child, I'm not going to necessarily physically hurt the child, but I'm still able to touch the child in a sexual manner. And then later on, act like nothing happened, act like my behavior was completely appropriate. So the court did have a tenable basis on which it found that there was a common scheme or plan that was perpetrated, and the crime against EV was just another iteration of that common scheme or plan, and that it was the court therefore had a tenable basis for introducing the evidence. The court did consider the probative value and found it very high in this particular case, in part because EV was a very young child and had difficulty articulating exactly what happened here. It was a situation where the only two people that could say what happened were EV and the defendant, and EV, again, was not very articulate. There's nobody else that was older and could understand what had happened. And there was a big question about EV's credibility as well. I think some of the issues were pointed out in the defense opening brief about EV's credibility. And so it was probative, highly probative. And given everything that the court reasoned in its oral decision, it's clear that the court had a tenable basis on which it decided to admit this ER 404B evidence. I would ask the court to affirm the conviction. Thank you.
I'm going to set this at 2 minutes in light of our earlier.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, Saltarelli tells us that an intelligent weighing of potential prejudice against probative value is particularly important in sex cases. Here, the court was required to do the fourth factor in which it weighed the probative value versus the prejudice of each act. These acts were diverse. Some of them fit the common scheme or plan devised by the court. So if you were to find that some of these didn't even fit that, they wouldn't have the probative value. The allegation of a different kind of act, for instance, didn't fit the oral rape of the four-year-old. That doesn't fit the common scheme or plan devised by the court. That wouldn't have the probative value. The court was required to go through each of these vastly different acts that occurred in different places, different times, with different kinds of victims, to see if to really balance that prejudice. And the court did not do that. That alone requires reversal. The court instructed the jury to find propensity, and it had an and or way in which the jury could consider this other act evidence, one in which for the purpose of sexual gratification, without identifying a non-propensity purpose.
When you say that, you're saying the court gave the Where is this and or quote found? Is it in one of the instructions?
11, page court paper 77.
77?
Correct.
Okay, is that an instruction?
It is the instruction. Your
okay,
Honor.
Thank
instruction
you.
11. And so there's two different ways in which the court can consider this other act evidence. It's instructing that if any touching occurred, it was for the purpose of sexual gratification. That's not a non-propensity purpose. The court basically instructed them that they can use it for propensity. Then it also allowed them to find under and or common scheme or plan. Well, we don't know which one the court used. One, arguably, the court could find. The first, it can't. That is not allowed under ER 404B and absolutely requires reversal.
Thank you, counsel.